Hello, listeners, and welcome back to the Dual Screens podcast. I am Andy, and this is, of course, the world's number one indie dev interview podcast, the show where we bring on the devs to share their story, talk about the games they make, and highlight the experiences that mean the most to us. And I just made that whole thing up. I might rewrite that later. We'll see how that goes. Anyway, joining us this week is Quentin de Buclas, Horror Game Award nominee. Very exciting, dude. And creative director of Decarnation, a breathtaking thriller where nightmares and dreams intertwine. Quentin, welcome to the show. How's it going, man?
Thank you, Andy. Thank you for having me. I'm doing great. I'm right now in south of France. It's sunny outside, so yeah, all good.
Man, I wish it was sunny here. It's been rainy these past couple of days, and I took a day off for this podcast specifically and to do some things like see my doctor that I've been neglecting for an amount of time I don't care to admit on air. But I was like, if it was nice, I'll go to the beach afterward, but it's like cloudy and muggy out, so I'm going to be trapped inside.
It can be interesting. Experience.
Listen, I'll just play your game some more the second we get off this call. The first thing I wanted to ask you as like a silly leadoff question, which I tend to do on these interviews, is what is a rhythm game doing in my horror game?
That's a great question and a surprising one, to be honest. You took me off guard right here. Not asking me for my background or something.
No, we'll get to that later. We'll get to that. That's perfect. Easy. That's the fluff. It's like, well, why did you want to make games? We'll get to that soon. This is the hard hitting. The things I want to know. And the fans out there of the game want to know. Explain yourself.
Yeah. Sure. So, yeah. The question about why a rhythm game in the middle of Decarnation, which doesn't feel like it should be there, is because Decarnation doesn't have like one kind of gameplay, main gameplay, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not like a game relying on a system. It's more like we try to tell a story. It's like a story-driven game. And so the story will dictate what the gameplay should be from one scene to another. And as we play a cabaret dancer, at some point you need to have some dance game, some rhythm game. That's the simple reason.
Yeah, it was just, it's so silly. Like, I remember when I first played it, like you're coming off of this haunting nightmare sequence when you're yelling at enemies to get out of this nightmare world. And then you cut to, you're doing a performance in the Black Swan, very appropriately named club where our character Gloria is. And I was like, this is so like a spin on the mood. But it was still kind of creepy in a way, even though it was like, it made sense what was going on in the story. And it reminded me a lot of Silent Hill 3, of all things, when there's, I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, there's like a little side mini game thing where you have to like throw a lead pipe into the sewer and this like sewer fairy comes out and like upgrades your pipe to like silver and gold. And it's so wacky and it's so out of place.
Yeah.
But there it is, right in the middle of a horror game.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's I remember like an article from Gamma Sutra from like 5-10 years ago about, you know, rhythm in horror. And it was from the people who did I don't remember exactly which game was it, but the point is, you know, if you keep your player in like in the darkness, in the total stress, at some point the player becomes immune to it. You know, like you start to get used to it, and suddenly like you don't feel it anymore.
Right.
And I think, you know, like, you know, horror games are a lot about tension, and it's one thing to put pressure, to put tension on the player, but it's another one to release it sometimes, you know?
Right.
And that's what we are trying to do with some lighthearted scenes, some that are fakely lighthearted. I think you see what I mean in the game. And also, you know, trying to aim, this is maybe for more like the visual aspect of it, the aesthetics of it, but for some poetry, you know, having some beautiful place where, you know, whore and beauty try to reconnect, you know, on the other side of the loop, let's say, you know, of the spectrum.
Yeah, I get that 100%. Like I was playing that segment, and I thought to myself, "Oh, this is the real horror because I suck at rhythm games. Like this is where the scary part is. This is where the real fear sets in." I was like, "I don't know what to do. It's up and left, and I'm missing them." Is there like, if you get all of them, is there like a reward? Because I'm always like weird about that stuff. Like if I miss a beat or two, I'm like, should I do it again? Should I reload? Should I go back and play it over? That's yeah, that's another
don't
fear
do
of
that.
mine.
Don't,
that's another
don't,
fear.
don't do that. You don't need to. I think you can reach like 5 stars. I don't know how many stars you get.
Oh,
on
I
that.
got 3 stars.
Oh, okay. That's okay.
That's not good. It's not great. That's shitty.
No, that's okay. And you know, Decarnation is also a game where we try. It's not a game about performance. You know,
correct.
When I did that game at first, you know, I wanted to do a game that anyone could play. Like, you know, if you are more like into books and not that much into video games,
right?
Like, person like from the generation of my mother, for instance, are. I was like, okay, simple controls, gameplay, yes, but not a challenging one where it's about performance, but more about sensation, how a gameplay can express something, can express an idea, can express an emotion. In the end, I think we succeed in that. Probably we didn't succeed in being for everybody, because as you could say, you know, the game still has all his strong codes of video games, of history of video games, and my mother still don't understand what I just done.
Yeah, it feels like at times like an elevated visual novel in a sense, because the visual novel, it's all about the story and just going through it and some choice, but this has like some little systems of gameplay like peppered throughout, so it really keeps your focus and attention. Before we dive too much into the game itself, where it came from, the origins, inspirations, I do want to talk about some very recent news for you guys, and that's these Horror Game Award nominations, which I was so glad to see you guys got mentioned and included. And the first one I want to talk about is the Indie Game of the Year Horror Award. And you're up there with some pretty heavy hitters too.
Yeah.
Like Signalis, one of my favorite games, I think, of all time even. What was it like seeing you amongst all these great games just being, you know, acknowledged and like, hey, what does that do for like sales or like, you know, figures and metrics? Like, how does that all like translate for you guys getting these sort of nominations and such?
Yeah. So yeah, as you just said, you know, it's very exciting. It's very satisfying to see your game, you know, years of hard work being converted in this kind of nomination. And as you said, like there are other great games in competing in this category. For me, like my personal favorite competitor here is Zambarlo's Immortality.
Oh, I haven't played that
really
one
was,
yet.
Oh, it's awesome. It's very, it's all a trip. It's, yeah.
All right.
Crazy,
okay.
crazy, good stuff. Like the guy is crazy for how ambitious he is and in aesthetics and all. But so yeah, that's awesome. Now, if you want to talk more like business-wise translation in, yeah, and Wishly says and all, it's almost nothing. Yeah, to be honest, yeah, because you know, people interested in that is a very small subset of players, and maybe most of the people who would dig that, like, oh, awesome, Decarnation is nominated here, have already purchased the game probably, or will at some point. But yeah, you know, like the in the wider spectrum of the audience, yeah, they don't know about it and maybe they don't care.
And then the other nomination you guys got, which I think is one of the more important things, at least when it comes to horror games, particularly, that's the best narrative. And
yeah.
Seeing that there, to me, I was like, yeah, this game deserves that. Because it's really hard to tell an engaging, thought-provoking, original horror story that doesn't rely on cliches. Because you have, like, there's such a history behind of, like, what horror is. And it's easy to be influenced and just and even take ideas and make it unoriginal. But you've crafted like a really great story here that resonates even with me, and I'm sure all your fan base too. So like, to me, that is like the best. Being in that category, I feel, matters more than most categories in the horror genre, if that makes sense.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. Thank you. I think it would depend from one game to another, you know, like if you take like the first Resident Evil, you know, like there is a plot, but
sure,
you know, it's not about that, and still the game is great, you know.
Right.
But in our case, yes, it's a game, it's a horror game relying on story, on storytelling, and so yeah, that's just like you said, like yeah, it's very satisfying, and you know, like I've been writing stuff here and there, like since I'm a teenager, but you know, I don't have like I'm not a writer by itself, you know, it's not my title, it's not my area of expertise at first. And yeah, and I worked took quite some time to pull out the story and to learn to write the dialogues and all. So yeah, that's very satisfying. Yeah.
So that's a good segue actually into more about Decarnation. So where, you know, you mentioned again, it's on the Steam page, it's in the game itself. Like, this game is inspired by a lot of classic horror films and books and media. Where did this story come from? Where did Decarnation first begin as it went along into becoming the game it is today?
So I think there are two main branches, two main routes, should we say. The first one is a book from Edogawa Rampo, who is a Japanese author who specialized in two genera. One was like crime stories, and the other one was Hiroguro. And Hiroguro, Eroguro, is like erotism mixed with grotesque, with dark, shady stuff. And so he wrote in 1931 this book called The Blind Beast. And if you read it to today, it's very hard to read, and it's very impacting for how transgressive and disturbing it is. Like, you would think like it has been written just this year, you know, for how violent, morally violent it is.
What was it called again? The Blind Beast. Okay.
Yeah. And really, if you can read it, yeah, check it. And there is a movie as well, which is a bit Serie B movie, but totally decent, a Japanese one as well. And yeah, I read that book. I was still in Ubisoft, like it was like a few years ago. I was working on the last Ghost Recon Breakpoint, trying to find meaning in my job, you know, the usual indie dev story, you know. And yeah, and I read that book and I was like, oh shit, what was that, you know? And yeah, I wanted to make a game out of it. And then in the process, without spoiling too much the story, but yeah, it diverted quite a lot from what this original book was, but at least it served as a trigger, as a starting point. So I think that's one of the two main roots of what Decarnation is. And the other one, I think, because I think we have to tell it to our listener, it's a lot about, you know, society, about, you know, it's not a political game first and foremost, but it has, the game has a sort of political comment, and not direct. You know, I did not try to do something like to teach people or to say, hey, look how things are bad or good or how should be, you know, it's a story, it's an adventure you will experience first and foremost. But still, like, you know, living in this society of, you know, symbolic violence, of all the question about the place of women in the society and all. Yeah, you know, even as a guy, you know, as a male, as a cishet white male, you know, yeah, it can impact you, you know. And as an artist, yeah, sometimes you have to spit out, you know, what you've been absorbing in you know, people around you, female friends, all this stuff, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure they share their stories with you that impacts you in some way. And, you know, I should have known from like one of the earlier scenes in the game, because I don't want to give away too much. It's a really great game. You should all check it out. When she's in the museum checking out the statue of herself, Gloria, and there's a man groping the statue, and I'm like, oh, this game's gonna go places. I feel it's gonna go to some really heavy places with the story. But that's great, yeah. Though. Like, I feel like, again, you know, like, it's what they say, like, you know, art imitates life, and you write what you know. And if you're if you're seeing these things in your day-to-day life and you're experiencing it, or you hear from other people in your life, it's going to make an impact on you. And then we have a game that kind of has like a little commentary on how things are for certain people of the world.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, sometimes they asked me, why did you want to make this game? Mm. And my answer is, I did not want to. You know, I had to, you know.
I don't want to do this.
No, it was here, you know, it was stuff like
every guest on the show. I don't want to do this.
Yeah, I had to. It's a hidden force pushing me. Exactly.
But yeah, so yeah, I mean, you felt this compelled. Like you had to, in a sense.
Yeah. Yeah, to maybe to free myself from inner stuff. I don't know. You know, it's maybe it's sort of catharsis. I don't know. Or doing it for people around me. I don't know.
Can I just say, I was, before you said it, that you worked for like a big company, I was like, in my brain, is it Ubisoft?
Yes. The good old one, the same.
What are the chances?
Yeah, but being French, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Oh yeah, I invite Yves Guillemot comes to all of my dinner parties.
Awesome.
But that was a big change for you, though, to move from like a big like AAA company working on a game like Ghost Recon, which, you know, those games are great, but they're not deeply thought provoking or big on metaphor or, you know, things like that.
To say the least.
Symbolism. What was that change like? That's a big, did you just quit outright to work on this game, or was it just like a side thing you did while still working at Ubisoft?
So yeah, first I have to say that's the second time I do this. I quit Ubisoft to do an indie game. First one was like 8 years ago. I was working at the time on Assassin's Creed License, and I left to do a game called Narcosis. Okay. Which is a sort of survival horror walking sim underwater.
Sure, familiar.
And then I went back to Ubisoft and I did it again. During the time of Narcosis, I did like the two at the same time. You know, I was working night and weekend on my side project, but here it was a bit different. It was, I didn't felt at the right place anymore, you know, when I was like, it was like 6 months before the end of Ghost Recon Breakpoint production. And really for a lot of reasons, it was not for me anymore. I had to leave like before the end of production, let's say. And so I just did, and I needed, you know, maybe I was frustrated, for a lot of reasons. And wanted to do sort of punk project, you know, something trash, something without any middle ground, any consensus, like, okay, let's go. And that was the Blind Beast. Like, okay, I will do on my own, coding it myself, doing shitty graphics, but I don't care. A sort of free adaptation of the book I said earlier, The Blind Beast. And, you know, little by little, it became, Decarnation, which was more polished, more complex, and with a full team around.
Would you go back a third time to Ubisoft?
I don't want to do that to Eve. Poor Eve, you know. Like, Eve. I'm coming back. I'm leaving him again. You know.
Oh, this guy.
I don't
again.
Want to disappoint him.
But then again, after you left the first time and then came back the second time, then left the second time, where they're like, okay, we'll see how long this lasts. He'll be back.
I think that was fine.
Like, I'm quitting. Okay, Quentin, sure. Whatever you say.
Yeah, you know. I think if I send a new resume to them, maybe they will start to notice a trend, a pattern, and
Well, listen, there is also another trend here. You've left both
yeah.
times to make two horror games in a sense.
Yes. Yeah,
What is
that's
that
true.
about?
Huh.
What's going
So
on
that's
there?
a
That's interesting.
and the funny stuff is I'm not that much of a horror player, to be honest. I can enjoy horror games, movies, whatever, but I'm not that much of a horror addict. I'm more like of a darkness addict. Like I like stuff where it's not clear. I like pessimism, I like symbolism, I like
You like
metaphors.
pessimism. I
Yes.
love that.
It makes me
I
feel,
love
it gives me
cynicism,
a sense of relief.
pessimism, apathy. All these
Yeah.
things give me joy.
Yeah, exactly. It gives me a sense of relief somehow. I always find happy ending a bit suspicious, Like as you can see, like I'm quite an enthusiastic person, like quite a happy person, but yeah, I feel way more comfortable in based in darkness.
I think people prefer like a shitty, somber ending to a horror story. I don't feel if a good horror story ends on like a positive note, I don't think it's right. You need like a little zinger, like a little, the evil is still there, the darkness is still lurking, all is not well in the world, kind of a thing. Like, yeah, it's kind of resolved, but not really. They're all still fucked, kind of in the end. 'Cause that's real life. That's how things are in the real world.
Exactly. Life is light and darkness. And yeah, so for me, like Narcosis and the Carnation are put in the horror genre, but I didn't try to make horror games. I just tried to tell story, and I think it's all also about talking about the dark parts of the soul, of what's inside us. I know like we are capable of great stuff, and we have very shiny stuff inside ourselves, but there is also this hidden part, that is darker, and sometimes we struggle to admit it. We have to go to therapy to try to explore it. We damage our friends and relatives because of it, and I think exploring it, going, okay, yes, there is a shady part of me, and let's explore it. I like that.
I wonder if you ever read the works of Carl Jung about like the
Yes,
shadow.
a bit, yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah,
it's like
exactly. Yeah,
right on point.
the shadow. And Carl Jung's shadow concept, yeah, I took it a bit. In the game, like there are these kind of ghosts with masks. And yeah, they were inspired from this theory because he's talking also about wearing a mask. And yeah, and there are Carl Jung's ghosts in the game directly.
I love it. I want to pivot a little bit to Gloria herself, our main character of the story. Where does she come from? Because I imagine, well, at least what we're, you know, what I think is, it's difficult to write a woman from a man's perspective. But earlier you mentioned how you have a lot of women in your life who tell you their stories and what they go through. Who is she? Is she like an amalgamation of the women in your life? Is she someone in particular that shared a story with you that inspired you for this game? What's her origin story on the creative side?
Yeah, that's a great question. I can't. I will keep some privacy to
Of
this
course,
question,
I'm not saying to name names or
but
give addresses or
yeah,
any of
yeah.
that.
It's an amalgamation. If you want, it's an amalgamation. Like I took some stuff that happened to me personally, despite being a man. Some stuff coming from the closest women of my life, You can, even if you don't know my personal life, you can assess who they could be around me. And story, like, when you start listening to women about how they experience their life, their past in the society, and their relation to men, and because that's the core of the topic, And yeah, if you take time to listen and you give them trust in how you can understand what they tell you, yeah, you listen some very fucked up shit, yeah.
What was that
And
process
yeah, and
like
I
for
think
you?
Gloria, what, sorry?
Like, what was that process like writing her and finding her voice and developing her character?
I think it was a bit sort of inner mess, you know, like something. Yeah, I was like throwing up, you know, spitting out. I don't know, you know, something like that. And there is also, you know, like the game happens in 89, and that's the time I was 4 years old in 1989. And it's so Gloria has the age of my mother, and my mother is vastly different from Gloria, but there is also some inspiration of my mother, one of her best friends at this time, and even on the positive side, you know, the interaction with between Gloria and Joy, how playful they can be together, and how spontaneous and how cheeky they can be. And yeah, that's memories from my childhood, yeah.
They're a fun couple, those two. Their interactions and conversation feels very genuine and grounded, which is why I like this story, because it feels authentic in a lot of ways. And again, like, even I can find a connection with the story that Gloria is trying to tell and what she's going through. So, like, again, just to wrap it around back, narrative and horror is paramount, and you like totally crushed it with this game. Quick pivot to something else that just came to my mind. It's in my notes here that I just realized. How in the world did you guys secure Akira Yamaoka to score some of your soundtrack for your game? And for those who don't know, that's like the Silent Hill composer. What did that cost, and how do I do it myself? But what was
that's
that process like? Because it's like he's a big deal in horror, and he's like, how does this little like indie game? I think it's like the first for this company, right? Is it your first game?
With this company, I started is the first game, but yeah, it's my second game as a director.
So how does that collaboration come to be?
Exactly.
Did
Like
Eve make a phone
everybody
call for you?
dreams to work with Yamaoka, and us, the small team. That was a bit magical.
Yeah, I'll say.
Yeah, and you know, you talked about nominations for like the Horror Game Awards, and I don't know if you noticed, but we are not nominated for the best OST.
You're not, and
What is this injustice?
it is a huge injustice. I just want to see who's on there.
Go check
Callisto
it.
Protocol,
Some
really? Eh.
and yeah, and I suddenly
Game isn't
like I don't
good.
want to,
It's not even a good
I
game.
don't want to be the annoying guy and like, why I'm not in this nomination, whatever, but
I'll
yeah,
do it for you.
fucking
Eh, why isn't
good. They did a huge mistake. Oh well, we are just humans. Well, coming back to Yamaoka, so well, it's 90% luck. I think we can say it. And 10% is a very good connection, I think a very good fit. So yeah, basically we had someone who knew someone, and it was enough to have like a quick conversation, to have the game shown to him. He was like, okay, interesting. Okay, I can afford to talk 20 minutes with the maker of this game. Okay, let's talk. And discussing with him, you know, like the Decanation has a lot of Japanese influence. Like I mentioned, the book from Edogawa Rampo earlier. The visual style is a bit inspired by, you know, classic JRPG or horror pixel art games from Japan. There is the music at some point. There is a lot of different Easter eggs, a lot of, in many ways, you know, the game is very inspired by Japanese culture. We haven't mentioned it, but, you know, Satoshi Kon's Perfect Blue, this
Oh
animated
my God,
movie.
yes, that's like all over
Yes.
this game.
Exactly. Yeah,
One of the
that's
best horror animes ever conceived.
exactly. Yeah.
Hands down.
And and not, you know, everybody knows about, I don't know, Princess Mononoke, about
Oh my
Akira,
God, yes.
and you know, and Perfect Blue, like not enough people know about Perfect Blue, you know.
I would rank
And
that
it's
higher than those two, to be honest. I love Akira to death and Mononoke, but Perfect Blue is just that whole like stalking aspect, and it's just the visuals in that, and the animation is just so ahead of its time. I saw it in theaters once. They like re-released
Whoa,
it for a big
okay.
screen, I took one of my friends to watch it. It was her first time seeing it because she loves anime. If she missed it, because it wasn't a huge, it wasn't a staple in anime over here in the West, like, you know, like in Akira or like a Mononoke was. And she loved it. She was terrified. One of the best experiences ever. But so 90% luck, you said. And I guess the Japanese influence helps a lot in getting him to be like comfortable and okay, this is I get what you're trying to do here.
And and you know, I showed Akira, instead of trying to impress him or something, I showed him my little drawings, a few notes, a few mock-ups, like in a very genuine way, like, you know, the humble creator showing to the master like what he's trying to do. And I think he understood it, you know. And really what sealed the deal was when I mentioned Edogawa Ranpo's Blind Beast, telling him the game is inspired by it. And he answered, thanks to his translator, okay, that's my favorite book ever.
Wow.
And
that's so my end. I have it now, guys. When the time comes, when I make my horror game.
Yeah.
Like, I love Blind Beast. He'd be like, oh, yeah, do my whole soundtrack, Akira.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing, though. So that's like, and again, when I saw that press release, I was like, I got to start taking this game a little bit more seriously. Mm. Again, I told you I love the aesthetic and the horror, because again, pixel and horror is like amazing for me. Yeah. Wet dream galore. But when I saw that he was involved, I was like, damn, they got that guy?
Yeah.
Damn, they're not fucking around, these people.
Yeah, you know, to be honest, I still can't really believe it. And for me, Yamaoka did a huge present. Like, for me, it's all about generosity. You know, the guy don't need it in terms of money. He doesn't need it in terms of credits. You know, like, he did already everything. He earned everything. And yeah, the amount of generosity involved in his decision to work with us, to spend time and to be very generous in terms of work, because you notice probably in the soundtrack, but he did a lot of material and a lot of different tracks with a lot of different instruments. Like, it's not like he just pushed like quickly one or two tracks, fully digital. No. The guy took it very seriously. It's incredible. Like, just talking about it right now, I'm still feeling like some goosebumps, you know.
I don't think that guy can do anything but take things seriously. I think he takes his music very seriously, very passionate, and every game he's tied to, no matter it be a horror game or there's a different game I saw he was doing music for. Was it a puzzle game? Something that wasn't horror, but like still, he brings the A game every time he does something. And to see him like committing that much to this little indie horror game, it just warms my heart. It's so great exactly, for you guys to have that. It's a little
The guy, he's a genius, and really for I can't feel anything but gratitude. And yeah, and everything was remote, of course, because he was staying in Japan. But yeah, I hope I can meet him sometime one day, and, you know, and kneel against in front of him and thank him, you know,
get
with
in line.
All my heart.
You get in line.
Yeah. All right.
We go together. That's amazing. That, like, I can imagine him just like, oh, I'm working on the Silent Hill 2 remake soundtrack. All right, I guess I'll do your stuff too, and make it sound just as good.
Yeah, that's surreal. Yeah,
God, some of my most favorite video game music ever, Silent Hill games. Those first four games is just on another dimension. That score. I don't know what he channels to come up with that music, but protect that man at all costs. So we're gonna be getting into our rapid fire section very shortly.
All right. So
always fun for us. Before we do, I want to ask you, when folks play Decarnation, it's not a very long game, which is also why I like it. It's perfect for the Steam Deck in bed, by the way. Just saying, thank you for that it was Steam Deck verified.
My pleasure.
When someone plays through the game and the credits roll and they put the controller down, what should they feel? What should be the takeaway after experiencing Decarnation?
Hey, I don't want to spoil it too much.
Okay. Yeah, I know.
So
It's
it's hard for me to answer because the emotion you would feel at the end maybe are somewhat surprising. Maybe I don't know what was your experience with it, but yeah, I will use my joker and not answer precisely this.
All right. And with that, oh, actually, no, I do want to ask you one more thing after we
Yeah.
get into the more personal rapid fire stuff. What's next for you? What's after this? You game's out there, it's got, great reviews, Horror Game Awards on the horizon. Hopefully you guys can get one, if not both of those awards. I think you deserve both, just saying. What's next? Another indie horror game? An Ubisoft resume? What's next for Quentin?
So what's next for me? So Ubisoft, nope. It was cool, great years, but yeah, enough of this stuff. Now, to be honest, I want to change a bit my position in game genre and all. I want to come back to something more systemic, more gamey. Like I love narrative and storytelling and dark stuff as we discussed earlier, but. I love games that are more mechanical, more tactical and all. So yeah, right now I'm coming back to this kind of vibe. Probably there will be still a strong story, probably some dark stuff, but yeah, something more gamey, more gameplay-ish,
I may have some ideas I want to run
gameplay-driven.
by you.
And I won't say anything, any more stuff for the
All right, well,
moment.
when the time comes, we'll get you back on the show to
Yes.
discuss your next project, but I may have to harass you for like some personal stuff I'm working on. So
All right.
I'm a huge idea guy. I just can't make a game for shit. I've tried. It's hard. And I give up
That's
easily.
hard.
One more last thing before we move on. Things
Yes.
keep coming to my brain. I really have to say, like I mentioned that it's a pixel game, but the pixel artwork in this game is just phenomenal. The stuff you guys do as I'm watching this thing, it's a little unreal. The effects that happen, the animations, even like the way the lips move while the characters are talking feels like it's they're actually speaking to each other. And I was like, bop, 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 bop. But yeah, whoever the artist was that worked on this, holy shit. This is just breathtaking visuals. Let them know.
Thank you for saying that. I haven't made the count, but I think we have tens of thousands of different frames. Because as you could see in the game, like sometimes we do a very complex animation for just 3 seconds and it's done and you won't see it anymore again. Like as you said, the game is short and that was one of the goal of the game, trying to say what we have to say in the least amount of time and then let the player carry on with her life,
You're right.
and not trying to extend it because the game has to last 10 hours, 20 hours. No.
Right.
The strategy was the opposite. And maybe what was hard was not doing it. Like, of course, it was long and hard and everything, but game development is long and hard.
Yes.
No. The stuff is how the reception is very polarized. Like, there are people like you that are sensitive to pixel art aesthetics and can notice the work involved and can be immersed in these aesthetics. Unfortunately, there are for many people, they don't res like pixel art don't resonate with them, and they would be like, meh, looks like old Pokemon game
Pretty
or
much, yeah.
Habbo Hotel stuff, and yeah. And that's like I accept it, but yeah, sometimes it's a bit frustrating to feel how you can try to, yeah, how you can land Yeah, I'm showing off here a bit, but a very good aesthetics, visual aesthetics for a game, and be totally ignored by a lot of people because it's just pixel art,
Right. Yeah,
That's.
because I think it's just a generational thing because, I grew up on the Nintendo and then the Super Nintendo after that. So I know like what limited palettes and animations look like. in the game.
Yeah.
And to see so much color and vibrancy and frames and all these things happening at once, it's like there's still so much left to do with this particular art style and aesthetic. And the way things bend and morph and explode and puke and bleed in this game, it's a symphony of beauty. And it's just...
Oh, thank you.
And I love it so much. Okay. I could talk about artwork and sprites till I'm dead. So we're going to move on from that. So rapid fire.
All right, Quentin.
I asked this of all my guests who are making a horror game. What scares you?
My own personal death that will come in a few decades.
Oh my God.
Real question, real answer.
I'm expecting like sharks, you know.
Spiders?
Spiders.
No, I'm sure about sharks and spiders and whatever. No, it's me ending my life and you look like it. I would like you to be immortal and me too, and you know, and we can do this.
Well,
for
here's
forever.
The thing, at the very least, I think making a game like this in some way is like a legacy that you've secured for yourself. You know, this is
well.
And you're also on this podcast, so you know we're gonna live forever.
Forever. Awesome.
YouTube is immortality. We nailed it. We got it. We're already there. We didn't realize it yet, but that's right. Deep. I never think about my own death too much. I don't want to. Like how much?
Yeah,
time...
you have this thinker and writer Montaigne, French thinker philosopher, who said like you should think about it every day. I'm not sure he's right, you know. Maybe, you know, I think whatever you try to do, like, it sucks, you know. You're not ready for it anyway.
It's not just like how much time do I have left, it's the time I have left to actually do something very meaningful with my life.
That's true, yeah. And you know that you are saying it, I think that's already a better way to put things in perspective. Mm-hmm. But even this, you know, I think we're in a era where we try to find meaning in life, but I think it's not even necessary. Like, you know, having a pleasing, like trying to avoid suffering, I think it's the best strategy, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, meaning is already something. It's to me, it connects a lot to vanity. Like, okay, my life has to be meaningful. I have to leave a mark. I have to change something around the world. Nah, come on. Just try to have a peaceful life, avoid suffering, try to be kind to others, and it's already a great objective.
I love when that's like almost therapy in rapid fire. Mm-hmm. Next question. If you were given the chance to revive a long dormant horror franchise, and they said, Quentin, we want to do a brand new so-and-so. It's been like 10, 20 years. You're the right guy. Your team has the chops to do this. What game would you want that to be?
So yeah, I know very well which game I would like to continue the franchise.
I love
it's Clock Tower. Do you know that game? I'd love to land a new Clock Tower game.
We're gonna talk after the show. I have ideas
because you know for people that are not familiar with it. I think I'm not a horror history expert, but I think it's more or less like the first survival horror game ever somehow on Super Nintendo. It's pixels and it has all this structure. And it's a teenager, a girl teenager we incarnate. And you know, she looks very much like Jennifer Connelly from you know, Dario Argento
movies.
Her name
is Jennifer. It's very it's very on the nose. It's not subtle in any way.
Exactly. And you know, these Dario Argento's movies, I love them as well. So yeah. Please make me do a Clock Tower game.
Oh my God. We're gonna talk later. hands down, if I were to rank my favorite horror games, I think Clock Tower on the PlayStation 1 was how I was first exposed to this franchise. And I had no idea that there was an SNES game because it never came overseas. It was trapped in Japan, I think, for years before we got it over here. I think it's releasing here soon, like the first official translation of the SNES game. I think WayForward is releasing like an actual, we've translated it, you're going to get it. officially official. But Clock Tower on PS1, it was like a slasher, like come to life, because there was like this villain with the giant weapon that was following you and you had to hide from them. I was like, this is like every single horror film I've seen when I was a kid. I'm playing it. And it was the most, and again, the idea of gameplay being I'm hiding from something and to not be caught, the most basic thing you play as kids, hide and seek. And I never played that mechanic up until that point in any video game ever. It just blew my mind as a young teen. And I like you more than I did 5 minutes ago, because that's a great answer. That is, whew, you're a soulmate. You're the one. All right.
Thank you.
What is a childish thing that you still enjoy doing?
Running naked when I get out of the sea. You can't do it anytime, anywhere, you know? But sometimes when I'm at the beach, like a savage beach where, you know, like wild area where with no one, if I can just be naked and run on the sand naked, I think that's very, like, you know, it's this childish energy of, you know, running happy.
You don't care about who's looking at you, what they're thinking, what they're doing. Yeah. It's like, no, nope,
yeah,
I'm just free. Yeah. Yeah, that's I that would be nice for me, but I'd have to like morph this whole thing a little bit before.
No. look, like,
no,
look,
just do it.
A 4 years, exactly. Look how a 4 years old run happy, you know, with his wee-wee floating around, and he's like, yay, you know, and he's just having the best time of his life, you know, and just do it.
Listen, you find
naked,
me
run naked on the beach.
You find me a four-year-old that has the hairy back of a Greek man and a beer belly, and then we'll see if they have the confidence to run around naked out of the water or in the pool.
I tried to find it for you.
I appreciate that. No, but still, I feel, you know, yeah, fuck it, why not? I'll do it. I'm sure it'll be fine. I'm sure it's legal in New York City to go to the beach and walk around naked. Sure, why not? If someone in your life, if someone close to you, be it a family member or a coworker or a friend or a significant other, if they got a phone call in the middle of the night saying that you've been arrested for committing a crime, what crime did you commit besides indecent exposure?
Beside that one, to be honest, you know, I'm quite not committing crimes.
Yeah, I don't get
anymore.
That vibe from you, but I feel like,
like
maybe
an old one, you know.
Maybe your happy-go-lucky self is hiding something. What would your shadow do if your shadow was in control?
Yeah, well, no, my shadow would do a lot of things, and that's why it's just my shadow. I won't answer for my shadow. I don't want to have issues. No, old crimes. Like, I don't know, you know, maybe some... Yeah, I was doing graffiti, street art when I was a teenager. So maybe someone from my old town, like, finding, okay, that's your name on the wall here. Come back here and watch the wall, maybe. Maybe this.
All right. Let's see. Would you rather have wet socks all the time? Or... I was going to say wet hair, but like me, you don't have a lot up there, so it's not really much of a big deal to dry in 2 seconds. Or a wet t-shirt all the time.
wet? That's
all the time. Either your socks or your shirt's always wet. One of the two.
So I practice a lot of dancing, and my shirt is often wet. So I'm used to it.
So you're used to it.
So I'll go with the wet shirt and the dry, very dry socks.
See, I was about to ask you next, would you think you'd win in a rap battle or a dance battle, but you dance?
Yeah, I do dance, yeah.
Holy shit. That's what kind of dance?
Social, like, dancing, yeah. Couple, and, you know, you dance, yeah.
Social, like, dancing?
Rock and roll. Yeah. Bachata, rock and roll, this kind of stuff.
Oh, nice. All right.
Couple dancing, yeah. I love that. Yeah, that's if there is one advice I can give to anyone is, yeah, learn to dance, social dance in couple, you know, and it's such a good energy, and yeah, it's good for your body, for your mind. You meet a lot of people, yeah.
All right, I'm gonna put my list. Walk around naked, social dance.
Yeah.
So
European
things I
stuff.
have to do. And finally, this is a fun question to end things on. Actually, no, I'm gonna ask you two more questions.
Okay.
What word best describes you when you've had too much to drink?
I don't drink too much too often, but yeah, enthusiastic. I'm a
Okay.
good,
That's good. You're a good time.
I'm good time drunk.
I'm good time. For a good time, drink with Quentin. It'll change your life. You might run around naked at some point after a few drinks.
So this I do sober. No, I don't do crazy shit when I'm drunk. I just have some crazy conversations. But yeah, like
love it.
everything that is a bit crazy or a bit physical, I do it. Like I dance sober, I have sex sober, I run naked sober. Drunk, I will just talk about whatever stuff
Yeah,
and yeah,
I
and have
love
fun.
it. I love it. You're amazing.
And cracking jokes.
This has been a really good conversation. I can't get enough. And finally, if you could think back to all the games you've played throughout your lifetime, your career, growing up. I imagine you played a lot because you got it to game development, obviously. If you could erase the memory of one game and experience it again for the first time, what game comes to mind?
I think the question is not that simple
It's not.
because, yeah, because I could name like one of my greatest experience in video game, but I played it at that moment, at that age. Like, if I would erase Final Fantasy VII from my mind, which is maybe one of my best memories, would I enjoy it the same today? I'm not so sure. So probably I would answer League of Legends. And the reason is I'm slightly addicted to League of Legends. At least I've logged too many thousand of hours in this shitty game. That is still quite interesting. And I'd like to erase it to see if I would fall into it once again,
Are you playing any of the spin-off games by the way? Like there's a fighting game coming out. There's that one that came out recently, like a little like top down.
I play Rune King, the Rune King.
Oh yeah, Ruin
I
King, yeah, the
found quite interesting.
turn-based.
Maybe, yeah. The combat system is pretty interesting with the timeline system and all. It's the company who did it is like Airship Syndicate, I think they're called.
Yeah, they did. What is that other game? It's I forgot it already. But yeah.
Battle Crusher or something.
Oh, Battle
Battle
Chasers?
K.
Is that what it's called?
Maybe.
So bad. Please come on the all right, that's good. Again, I'm learning, like it's so crazy how someone that made one of my favorite horror games in recent memory worked for Ubisoft on Ghost Recon and plays League of Legends of all
Yes,
things.
and
Oh, the
doesn't play
world
that
makes no
many horror
sense.
games. Yeah,
Everything is
that
upside
makes no sense.
down. But Clock Tower in the end saved you, Quentin. So we're good. We're good. And that, listeners, saves you from me. That's the end of the show. It's over. We did it. Thank you so much, Quentin, for joining us this week. It's been a blast. It's been like a long time in the making. I think when we spoke like a while back when your game first launched, it was like a week out, and you're like, the game's not ready yet.
Exactly.
Was like,
And
no,
after I was like, sorry, Andy, I'm just too burned out.
I think it was like 2 days
Give me a
before
few weeks.
launch, and I was like, hey, best of luck with the launch. It's like in 2 days, right? You're like, it's not ready. There's a patch we're working on. I was like, I'm gonna leave him alone and put him over here. I'll talk to him later. Well, thank you so much, Quentin. And thank you,
My
listeners,
pleasure.
for tuning in once again to the Dual Screens podcast. Find all our stuff on Podbean or on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/dualscreenstv. And we're on Twitter at @dual_screens. I'm thinking about going to PAX West this year for the first time, so we'll see. Hopefully more on that later. But until then, Quentin, where can they find Decarnation and you, all the social stuff you want to plug?
So Decarnation is on Steam right now. It's on Nintendo Switch. It's on Good Old Games. If it's not, it will be very soon. I don't have the precise date yet. And me, you will find me. It's not necessary. Don't find me. But
you'll find Quentin you on the beach.
Exactly. Find me on the beach. I'm on Twitter, but really, I'm not chasing Twitter followers. So. If you really want to find me, you will find me. And otherwise,
just like I did.
Forget it. Play Decarnation and I'm happy.
The next time you're on League, you may come across Quentin. If there's someone in the darkness hanging out in the
corner, add me on League of Legends and let's play some duo queue. I would love that.
And we'll add all those links below. All right. Thank you, Quentin. Thank you, listeners. Go play this game. It's a lot of fun-ish. It's spooky. It's creepy. It'll change your world. I loved it. It's not that pricey, so please support indie devs. They do good work. They do great work. And until next time, please be excellent to each other. Thank you, sir. That was great.
Thank you so much. Man.
That was a lot of fun. So I've been like making a Clock Tower game for a little bit. I'll show you some stuff. I don't want to get the time right now, but we'll discuss on Twitter, or I'll email you. But again, thank you so much for all your help and coming on the show and being amazing. And I'll talk to you
soon.
Yeah,
it was very cool.
This should be posting.
Very
cool.
Put very, very interesting questions and very good vibe. It was really, because there are a lot of same question coming in interviews and all, and you took me off guard a few times.
What are your thoughts on modern horror and
telling your whole story background, like, why did you do video games?
Why did you get involved in what made you want to make games for a living? Well, I'm glad you had fun. But whenever you want to come back on to talk about your next project, or when you go back to Ubisoft to talk about the next Assassin's Creed game, let me know. And
you won't see me again in TV, but I will tell you a bit more about my next project next time. And if you want to share with me, like if you are trying to do
games
then and all, and you want a few tips, really sincerely, I would be happy to.
That'd be great.
Check your stuff and get some
amazing. Awesome, man. All right, I'll talk to you soon, buddy.
All right.
Have a great night, man. Take care.
Bye. Thank you.